What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the president says things are going to be different in Afghanistan. No more nation building, just killing terrorists. But a closer examination suggests this new strategy looks a lot like the strategy of the last 16 years. It's Wednesday, August 23rd. Can you remind me when you were in Afghanistan?
So I was in Afghanistan in 2002 for a little bit, in and out, and then 2008 to 2014.
Right. So you were basically stationed there.
Yes. I covered Afghanistan from 2008 to 2014.
Right. Yeah. Right. In my mind, somehow you were a Marine, maybe because of the hair, but
no.
I remembered you were actually just a reporter. But that's a lot.
Yeah. I look tough, but I'm not.
I think you're pretty tough. Okay. We're jumping in. Matt Rosenberg, what is the theory of nation building in Afghanistan? How and when did this begin?
So, you know, you've got the September 11th attacks.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts.
Within a month, the U.S. is in Afghanistan. It's pushing to help kind of oust the Taliban.
America strikes back. Afghanistan is pounded with bombs and missiles from the air and sea.
That doesn't take very long. By the middle of 2002, the Taliban's gone and the country's stabilizing.
The liberation of that country was the beginning of the long and unrelenting struggle we have entered.
But what the U.S. inherits there is a country that doesn't have a functioning government. There's nothing to take over. So you're either going to leave and the Taliban are going to come back, or you're going to build a state. So very early on, we're nation building. There was no choice.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Then 2003 rolls around and the U.S. invades Iraq.
It was this short, and this is what happened.
And that immediately sucks up a tremendous amount, both the bandwidth and the military power that the U.S. has on hand. We weren't pouring our best minds and best people into the problem. So in 2004, 5, 6, the Taliban, who had retreated to these havens in Pakistan, those who could escape, they start filtering back in greater numbers, and they start really sowing the seeds of a renewed insurgency. Mm-hmm. And by 2008, during the presidential campaign, Obama runs partly on
the central front in the war on terror is not Iraq, and it never was.
Getting out of Iraq and getting into Afghanistan to not lose it. And when he gets into office, you know, he orders up a bunch of assessments and finds out it's worse than he thought.
Afghanistan is not lost, but for several years, it has moved backwards.
And at that point, he then starts sending in more troops.
And as commander-in-chief, I have determined that it is in our vital national interest to send an additional 30,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan.
The whole idea was to give the time and space needed to build an Afghan government that can run the country,
right,
that can win people over from the Taliban side, and that those two pressures will then bring the Taliban to the table. That's the idea.
What actually is nation building? What does that mean on the ground?
Nation building is kind of this top-to-bottom exercise where at the very top you'd have senior officials working with other senior Afghan officials to help them build government ministries. But then you get down to the village level where, you know, a lot of Afghan villages never had any government to begin with. I mean, this is one of the poorest countries in the world. And you'd get there. I remember going on these embeds. You'd be with some company commander, this 27-year-old guy. Mm-hmm. He would have to get to know all the elders in the area, and they would have what they call shuras, kind of like this quasi town hall type meeting type thing to talk about some problem. Did they need an irrigation ditch, or can I give you some money for this? And you quickly get into these kind of absurdist places where you know, they want to have a shura for the elders of the village. So they buy a bunch of goats, and you're asking how much they paid for the goats. They're paying $2,000 or $3,000 a goat. And you're like, the going price of a goat here is about $100. You know? So, I mean, that's the thing. So nation building is really complicated, because if you're pumping in money into a place with very little structures, you're going to end up in a pretty quickly situation with a lot of corruption, a lot of inefficiencies, and just a lot of real challenges.
Can you explain to me in simple terms where we're at in the war in Afghanistan right now?
All right. Since the end of 2014, Afghan forces have been doing the fighting, most of the fighting. The end of 2014, the Americans and their European partners went into what they call a purely train, advise, and assist role, where they're supposed to help the Afghans fight.
This was under President Obama, sort of saying, like, it's your war now.
Exactly. We do a little medevac, a little bit of air support, but we're pretty under-resourced, as the military would say. And there's a smaller counterterrorism mission of mostly special ops guys and CIA guys who go out and, like, kill al-Qaeda and ISIS. Since then, the Afghans have been losing. There's no other way around it. The Taliban steadily gaining territory. At one point in 2015, they took over a whole city for a few days before the Americans helped beat them back. And I think where we really are is something that every military strategist, political strategist here has to wrestle with, which is a simple problem. We're putting in more troops right now and more resources so we can provide more air support, training, medical evacuation to Afghan forces. The Taliban has none of that, yet they're winning. Why?
Why?
Because they've got momentum on their side, and they are not fighting for people who they believe are corrupt. They're fighting for people they believe in. The Afghan soldiers aren't. Their leadership is divided. Those who aren't corrupt are fighting with each other. And look, I mean, the corruption there, it's hard to overstate. There was one point where the Americans had all these anti-corruption task forces going, and this other very senior American rightly observed, how are we going to crack down on corruption? If we try to arrest every corrupt government minister, a cabinet minister, there'd be one left who wasn't arrested.
Is what you're saying, Matt, that the Taliban is fighting for a war that they believe in, and the United States and the Afghan military that we've tried to prop up are not fighting for a war that they believe in as much? Is that why you're saying the Taliban is winning?
Yeah. They have support of the people. It's hard to measure, but they're clearly some support. They're clearly giving them shelter, and it's not entirely all born of fear.
We are not nation building again. We are killing terrorists.
So President Trump on Monday seemed to set up nation building as this unattractive alternative to just killing terrorists. Is that a dichotomy that exists strategically in the world that you inhabit? You talk to lots of military.
You know, it's hard to say. I think his allergy to nation building isn't unique. All across the political spectrum, there are a lot of people who would make a strong case that no matter what our intentions are, no matter what our resources are, strong countries build themselves. That somebody from the outside isn't going to be able to build a strong country. And there's decades of evidence in parts of the world where we've collectively, the global community has spent hundreds of billions of dollars doing development work and hasn't gone anywhere. But this idea that we can just purely go kill terrorists, that there's some kind of military solution here, I don't think you can find a person on the planet who's seriously engaged in Afghanistan and spent time there and that believes there is a pure military solution here. This is not a war of annihilation like World War II, where we're going to crush Germany and Japan. You know, there's nobody there to crush. The crushing the Taliban would be crushing a great many Afghans. If you're trying to keep this from becoming a haven for militants and others, then just killing them doesn't actually accomplish that. Then you need to create a real country that's strong enough to enforce its laws, to control its own borders, and to give its people a reason not to give haven to these groups.
Well, so let's talk about what seemed like a kind of new idea for a minute. And that was President Trump as a candidate. He campaigned on the idea that the strategy in Afghanistan would be to not be in Afghanistan. So that was different.
Yep.
What happens so that Trump says what he said on Monday night?
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Look, you can't discount the role of politics here. You certainly don't want to be the president who lost Afghanistan. And that was certainly most likely going to be the case if you just pull troops out immediately. Also, don't discount the presence of a number of generals in his administration who all played significant roles in the Afghan war and pushed him towards this. General McMaster is actually a great example here. He was in Afghanistan in 2010 and 11. He ran this big anti-corruption task force.
I think in both Afghanistan and in Iraq, we didn't pay enough attention to the political dynamic. For example, in Afghanistan, And we're trying to overcome all of this now in Afghanistan. But in Afghanistan, if you think about the way the
military was going around telling everyone who would listen that the greatest single threat to Afghanistan was what he called criminal patronage networks, that is, a bunch of senior officials all out to enrich themselves and help each other out.
Actually, many of these criminal networks became stakeholders in state weakness, because it's the weakness of these institutions that gave them impunity, freedom of action, and so forth.
He said, that and the Taliban havens in Pakistan, those were the big issues. If you didn't solve that, you couldn't win the war.
So it sounds like these generals made peace with what they think is necessary, and I guess what the president was willing to agree to.
Yes.
So what was our strategy in Afghanistan before Monday night?
It was this train, advise, and assist the strategy. The thing is, I'm not sure that's entirely changed right now, because, looking at what President Trump said, he spoke in incredibly vague terms. A lot of we're going to win, a lot of, victory has a clear definition, a lot of rhetoric, but not a lot of clear ideas there. Mm-hmm. And his top advisors were offering a totally different view, saying the ultimate solution was, going to be peace talks with the Taliban, that they would submit to negotiations because we would show more military force now because Trump was in charge. The thing is, that's not a new idea. That was the whole idea behind the surge. When President Obama ordered up was, we get the military in there, they beat back the Taliban cry uncle, we got to have peace talks. We had 100,000 troops then, and 40,000 European troops there as well. We're now down to 13,000 when all this is said and done, plus a few thousand Europeans. So why is this going to work now when it didn't work then?
It sounds like what you're saying, Matt, is that every president has had some schizophrenic kind of debate within it, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, now maybe even the Trump administration, around the question of, am I nation building or am I just killing the enemy? That this is the back and forth that every president has already experienced.
Yep. And I think if the military has the same problem, they really have two minds. We got to go out and fight. We got to do this. But, this is a political problem. We can't shoot our way out of it. So far, we haven't found any way out of it. But there have just been moments. I'm looking at these Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, just at a press conference. Mm-hmm. And there are things. I'm looking at the transcript right now. It's like we could be in 2005. We could be in 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Statements saying things like,
we chose not to just focus on Afghanistan, but we undertook a fairly comprehensive review of our relationships in Pakistan.
Talking about Pakistan, but the Taliban have a safe haven in Pakistan. We have spent 16 years trying to figure out how to get Pakistan to stop doing that and to behave much more like an ally. The Pakistanis say they are. It's the worst kind of marriage one can imagine. Literally, Tillerson, just now saying Pakistan in particular can play an important role here.
We stand ready to help Pakistan address terrorist organizations inside of their country, but they must adopt a different approach themselves.
I mean, that's a statement that could have been made in 2002, was certainly made in 2011, 12, and 13, and it's just being said again now as if it's, some kind of new thought or something worth stating.
Is what the president is describing, our nationalist president, this killing terrorists but not nation building, is that an inherently less interventionist approach, if we're being honest? Is that why he's describing it that way, to kind of save face?
I think he is. I think maybe he believes it. But you also look at the other things he said about the Afghan military helping them fight better.
America will continue its support for the Afghan government and the Afghan military as they confront the Taliban in the field.
Helping Afghanistan pay for itself more.
We are going to participate in economic development to help defray the cost of this war to us.
I mean, that all involves nation building. So it's not like we're going to stop doing the things that one would call nation building tomorrow, because Trump literally laid out a plan that includes a ton of it.
So what is a terrorist killing in the Trump kind of lexicon and strategy that he is laying out? Is it drone strikes? Is it done from the air so you don't have as many troops on the ground? Is it targeted assassinations from American snipers? What is it?
I it's hard to say. I imagine it's a combination of all those, a lot of night raids, as they call them. I don't think the U.S. likes to use the term targeted assassinations, even though it certainly seems to be what we do.
But why can't you just do these assassinations? Why can't you just kill terrorists?
I mean, you can. You're just going to create more of them eventually. Here's the first of all. Drone strikes aren't that accurate. When you unleash violence, other people get caught up in it. And when you keep people's fathers and brothers, the people you've left behind tend to think their fathers and brothers were good people, even if they weren't. And you're going to create some more along the way. I mean, there's just no way around it. You can't kill people without having repercussions. And so we're just going to kill more and hope that ends the problem. I mean, every time you kill, you create the problem anew.
So if all you do is airstrikes aimed at terrorists, you're saying it's just going to make the American terrorism problem in Afghanistan worse.
Yeah. Let's also, what is that American terrorism problem in Afghanistan? September 11th was launched from Afghanistan by Al-Qaeda. The Afghans were not really part of Al-Qaeda at that point. And the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban, which is distinct from a separate Taliban movement that's developed in Pakistan, but the Afghan Taliban, as far as I know, has never sought to launch an attack outside its area. It's never attacked people in Europe. It's never attacked the United States, as far as I know. So who are we fighting there? You know, there are remnants of Al-Qaeda. There's now an Islamic State branch. But the day-in, day-out Taliban, do they have any ambitions beyond Afghanistan? We've seen very little evidence they do.
And then what you're raising, Matt, is one of the great original questions of American intervention in Afghanistan, which is what happens when a culture like the United States sees something in a culture and religion like that practiced by the Taliban that they find somehow abhorrent? Is that sufficient to try to remake another country's political system?
It's a really good question. Now, look, there are a lot of Afghans who oppose the Taliban, who are miserable under Taliban rule and don't want to see us go. So I don't want to make this as like we're coming in and imposing our values. There are many Afghans who share our values. That said, you know, Trump made it very clear that he's got no interest in human rights.
Ultimately, it is up to the people of Afghanistan to take ownership of their future, to govern their society, and to achieve an everlasting peace. We are a partner and a friend, but we will not dictate to the Afghan people how to live or how to govern their own complex society.
And so if that's not any part of this anymore, and that has been a big part of it, women's rights especially, since the beginning. I mean, women, and this is a great thing. I think, you know, everybody, both the Afghans and Americans who are involved in this should be proud of this. There are women today who work in offices and jobs in Afghanistan that was unimaginable 17 years ago. You know, they could barely leave their homes. If there's no interest, then why are we fighting? You know, why not just try and cut a deal with the Taliban now? Say, hey, you guys come back, do what you want, just don't let Al-Qaeda be here and get rid of Islamic State. Would it work? I don't know. Is it a good idea? We all have our thoughts on that. But if human rights isn't part of this and democracy, then what are we doing there?
So, Matt, finally, you described a frustrating and a complicated, sometimes impossible-seeming situation in Afghanistan, and you seem very skeptical about this latest approach from President Trump. I imagine if there was a clear solution to this, we'd know about it, and you'd know about it from your years in Afghanistan. So what can you say about what could be done?
You know, I honestly don't know, because there are no good solutions here. Every single one of them is going to involve sacrifice and pain, either on our part or the Afghans' part or both. You know, if we were to withdraw orderly but quickly, would the Afghan government collapse? It may well. If it didn't, if it survived, it'd certainly be stronger for it. You know, if we stay, are we going to stay for 10, 15, 20 years? Because Trump kept this pretty open-ended. And I know that right now what Trump seems to be doing is a very familiar strategy. It's kind of derisively referred to by military types as mowing the grass.
What does that mean?
Cutting the lawn here. Or, you know, where terrorists spring up, we cut them down. They grow back, we cut them down some more. That's not a compliment to say you're mowing the grass. But that seems to be what they're doing right now and what we're looking at more of at the moment.
I have to say, you sound exasperated yourself in a way that I find kind of striking, like that you are yourself a little fed up with this.
I mean, it is incredibly frustrating to come back to Washington and listen to this debate just go in circles. It's the same debate dressed up in slightly new different terms and slightly new different parameters. And maybe the numbers have changed, but none of the ideas are fresh or new. And look, I hope I'm totally wrong about this. I hope there's something here that I'm not seeing and that we're not seeing. It's just given the last 16 years and how much this looks similar in some ways, it's just hard to see how it works.
Thank you, Matt. I really, really appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
After the president's speech, a spokesman for the Taliban called it, quote, nothing new. And Afghans on the government side had a similar take. A member of the Afghan High Peace Council told The Times that's the same strategy going on the last two decades. Trump, he added, said we're going to win, but he didn't make it clear how we're going to win. Back in the United States, Breitbart News, with Steve Bannon newly back at the helm, agreed with the Afghans. It slammed the president for a flip-flop and compared him to President Obama. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray. And that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today.
Good evening. I'm Admiral Scott Swift, the commander of U.S. Pacific Fleet. I've got a brief statement to make, and I'll take your questions following that statement.
Divers from the U.S. Navy have found the remains of some of the missing sailors aboard the destroyer John S. McCain, which collided with an oil tanker off the coast of Singapore on Monday. 10 sailors have been missing since the collision.
Our thoughts and prayers continue to be with the families of those sailors and the families of our sailors who were injured.
It's the second time in recent months that a cargo vessel has struck an American Navy ship.
So until we have exhausted any potential of recovering survivors or bodies, the search and rescue efforts will continue.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.